Hello and welcome to episode one of the Matter of Design podcast. Here we'll explore the latest in scientific research, mental health issues, and design, and how they intertwine to shape our world. I'm your host, Jason Dale, and I want to make it very clear that I am not a mental health professional. I'm an architect, and I'm based in North Carolina. Here, I also serve in our state's capital as a commissioner with the Design Review Commission. So today, we're venturing into a fascinating intersection that I think needs much greater attention. You know, with the latest neuroscience on neurodivergence creates a lot of potential for innovations in architecture. As I said, I'm not a mental health professional. I am an architect. I own a practice called Falspar, but a great deal of my research has been dedicated to developing ways in which we can design what I like to call, or what I do call, trauma-informed and psychologically supportive spaces. Now, let's unravel a little bit on how, as architects, developing an understanding of what's behind neurodivergent conditions like, say, autism and ADHD can guide us in designing spaces with the potential to help neurodivergent individuals thrive. I hope this episode will be especially relevant to researchers, mental health professionals, design students, parents, and business owners. First, let's demystify a little bit about neurodivergence. The term encompasses various atypical neurological configurations, including autism and ADHD. As I said before, I particularly am diagnosed with ADHD myself, and it has caused some of the issues for me that we will be discussing in this podcast. So these conditions are unique in each individual, but there are also quite a few common characteristics worth noting. You know, for example, people with autism or on the autism spectrum may experience heightened sensory sensitivity, challenges in social communication, and a strong preference for routines. ADHD, on the other hand, it often involves difficulties with attention regulation, impulsivity, hyperactivity. Despite the differences, neurodivergent individuals share major strengths, such as heightened creativity, attention to detail, and unique problem-solving skills. As you'll see, many of the skills that we commonly find among neurodivergent people facilitate extraordinary abilities in the worlds of art and design. I think it's important to consider our words and how we use them in this context too. Don't want to take a moment to talk about that. I recently heard a talk by Dr. Gavin Latte discussing how we say things like, "What is wrong with you?" and how it's not really a question when we say that as much as it is an accusation. And, maybe a better way to say something like that would be along the lines of, "What happened to you that has caused you to feel this way?" And I think that, as we begin to discuss some of these issues of neurodivergence or just mental health in general, pay attention to how we phrase our questions and comments. We'll talk about two of the words that I've used so far describing individuals as neurodivergent and extraordinary. These can carry different connotations depending on the context in which they're used. On a positive note, referring to someone as neurodivergent, it highlights their value, the value of their unique cognitive processes and their perspectives. It champions the idea that diversity in thought can lead to better problem solving and creativity. Celebrating extraordinary capabilities that it may arise from Prony's differences. Conversely, the term can be used negatively, when it reinforces stigmas and stereotypes, and positioning neurodivergent traits as abnormalities or even undesirable. The term extraordinary, it usually makes us think of admiration and respect, implying that people surpass conventional standards in some way. Take a second to think about that, though. When juxtaposed with neurodivergent, using extraordinary may unintentionally create a narrative that suggests that neurodivergent people have to meet some exceptional standard in order to be valued. It may seem insignificant to some folks, but it's vital to use these terms thoughtfully and in the right tone. We should all recognize the inherent worth of every individual beyond any labels, and we should be promoting a culture where every variation of human experiences is greatly appreciated. Now, let's turn our focus to what neuroscience reveals about the neurodivergent mind. In 2021, Nicole Ballmer, medical doctor and master's in education, and Julia Frew, another medical doctor, published an article for Harvard Medical School's Harvard Health Publishing that discusses how essential it is to understand that there's no one right way of thinking, learning, or behaving. And differences, it's very important for us to understand that differences are not deficits, they're just differences. Research has identified distinct patterns in brain connectivity and function in individuals with autism, on the autism spectrum, and individuals with ADHD. These patterns, they influence how we perceive and how, we interact with our environment. There's a lot of stigma around people with neurodevelopmental differences, and unfortunately, a lot of this is from a lack of understanding and a lack of awareness. And much of this leads to the environment of isolation. And for instance, let's say sensory processing differences mean that a bustling office plan might be overwhelming and even paralyzing for anyone with, on the spectrum of autism or ADHD. I personally experienced the paralyzing effects of that myself when I used to work in the corporate world in large offices that sometimes were extremely chaotic. And I have even physically frozen before for a brief period of time because I just couldn't process everything that was happening around me. And so, yeah, it can be debilitating at times. So we need to think about those things. Our some minds will thrive on that stimuli. It's understanding the neurological variations is critical in order to for us to understand supportive environments that can cater to a diverse and wide range of needs. Well, we'll return in just a moment after a short sponsor break. Thank you. All right, thank you. This brings us to an exciting part, how architecture can integrate some of these insights as we've been talking about to create spaces that enhance the well-being of people with neurological differences. One very effective strategy is incorporating sensory modulating design elements. This could be passive or it could be active. Such as using soundproof materials to reduce auditory distractions and even shape sounds and shape sound reverberation within a single space through everything from shape of the form of the room and pieces in the room, movable partitions, and materiality of those things. There are lots of new metamaterials on the market that have sound characteristics that we've never seen before. Really astonishing materials out there. Another is selecting subdued color palette and minimizing visual clutter. Bold colors do tend to create bold emotions. The subject has had much attention in the scientific community for hundreds of years. It leads all the way back to Goethe's 1810 publication of The Theory of Color and Goldstein's elaboration on Goethe's theories in 1942. But with that, let's also discuss the true consensus on color is it's kind of the low-hanging fruit in design discussions. We hear a lot and we read a lot of definitive blanket statements, about color and color's effect on our emotions. But it's important for us to recognize that much of this is theoretical. And by all means, it is not consistent, even among small groups of people. There is a lot of good information out there that we can use on color theory and color combinations. It's just important. I would like to stress that it's just important to know that there are no definite answers for all people. Just it's really important to ask questions or thoughts and patience and individuals and studies if you're a researcher and stay open-minded when it comes to these things in color. Lighting also plays a crucial role. Many neurodivergent individuals benefit from adjustable lighting that mimics the natural, natural daylight. And so there are plenty of platforms that allow us to program light levels, color, temperature on a schedule that can greatly improve anyone's well-being throughout the day, no matter whether they're neurodivergent or neurotypical, and create much more inclusive spaces that will increase productivity and well-being. So I could go on for hours, I think, on strategies, but another approach is flexible space. And planning a flexible space offer a variety of areas such as quiet zones for focused work and collaborative spaces for interactive tasks, which can cater to, it can cater to different sensory and social preferences. Ultimately, it's very important to ask questions of our users, as I've said before, and find solutions that meet their specific needs. So, to briefly illustrate a few of these concepts, imagine a school, and like any school you go into, there will be neurodivergent students. There is a neurodiverse student population in every school that you go to. And the classroom could feature adaptable layouts, movable partitions, allowing teachers to, adjust spaces accordingly to that particular day's activities and in certain circumstances. You could even provide sensory rooms with calming features like weighted blankets. Soft colors, lighting could offer, a retreat for students needing a break, a sensory break in particular. Similarly, in workspace settings, offering noise-canceling tiles, which is becoming a very popular thing, or breakout areas equipped with nature-inspired decor, natural light, plenty of natural light, and plants. These can all boost productivity and comfort for a neurodiverse and more inclusive, working environment. Well, before we wrap up, it's important to emphasize that this isn't just about making spaces livable for neurodivergent individuals. It's about fostering inclusivity, and maximizing the potential for the wellness of all people. By acknowledging and designing for neurological diversity, we not only create better environments for neurodivergent individuals, but we enhance the well-being and innovation of spaces for anyone and everyone. If you're a researcher, mental health professional, business owner, architect, or a developer, consider how these principles might apply in your work. And for parents or caregivers out there, creating, such spaces in the living environment and advocating for such considerations in schools and public spaces can make a significant difference in a person's quality of life. So that's all I've got for today. And thank you for joining me on episode one. I hope that you found some of these insights valuable. And if you did, please share this episode with others that might benefit from it. And please don't forget to subscribe to Matter of Design for more explorations as we move forward at the intersection of science and mental health and design. Thanks for listening. And until next time, keep exploring and stay curious. Thank you.